trip to the Canadian National and the World Championship. There were the times at the excessive questioning of outrigger canoe and kayak at Rupert. I paddled up to 4 or 5 times a week. Now, a little bit of my challenges, I am a hard of hearing person. Because of that, my hearing, I don't hear very well. So, the challenges can be buckled down into 2 categories for me. One is the communication issues, and second, the technology issues. First, I'm going to talk about the communication issue. You know, in every way, you hear the announcer, the girl with the air how beep, and there you go. Now, for me, that means I have to listen for the air horn. And for the first couple of years, I was always late to react to the horn. Even in the middle of the race, you're trying to paddle in time with the whole boat. But it's a lot more than just rushing the person in front of you. Because when I did competitive racing, the elite teams, they had to paddle very, very fast, up to 90 to 100 strokes per minute. So, if you only watch the person in front of you, you are going to be out of time for sure. In a race, there are also quite a number of cars of faces that tell you to change your duck rate and how much power to put you to the rattle. And sometimes the drummer or the steel person, they have to make up a call at the fly, maybe because they are very close with another team, and the drummer, they want a little bit more power out of the team for the finish. Even out of the race, there is a fair bit of communication issues, because in the team, there's a lot of socialization. In practice, you just sit in a boat, you just chat away. For me though, my communication limits me to only to the seat around me. I can't really hear or understand how people are talking at the other half of the boat or at the very back of the boat. I have no idea. Sometimes one or two people will make a joke at the whole boat will laugh, and I feel like I'm missing out. Going over to the 6-man outrigger canoe. The 6-man outrigger canoe is when you have 6 people in a canoe rather than a tug boat. In a 6-man outrigger canoe, you put on one side of a boat, but every 40 strokes, you switch side. For example, if I was paddling on the right, every 40 strokes, I would have to switch to the left. Usually, each boat, they will have somebody who announces the call, and they will say, "Hat ho!" How do I get around my hero challenge? I make the call every time. Easier for me to make the call than to listen to the call. And it's also the same as talk about in terms of socialization. It's really hard to talk to people, especially in front of you, a free seat ahead of you, or behind you. However, it's not always difficult, because when you get more experienced paddling in the team, you got a better feel of how the boat is moving. Well, you got a better feel of how the boat is moving. You know from the feel how you are doing, whether or not you need to pick up the rate, whether or not you are going too fast. So it takes some experience. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about single person practice, where you re-practice that one-man canoe or kayak. We usually paddle in a group, and I usually make up the routine with the group before we go out. And then after we go out, when we take a break, I'll have to double check with the group on how we are doing the workout. So it's not too bad. Overall, when it comes to actually performing that part itself, it helps to be able to hear. But I got you to eat through sheer experience. For somebody who is probably more deaf than I am at the water, it's hard to ask somebody to help you out with that. After 20 years, I retired from paddling and I became a steer person. As a steer person, my responsibility to the team shoot way up. Right, because if you are a bad paddler, you slow the boat down. If you are a bad steer person, your team gets disqualified in the race, and you have a whole team of people pissed off at you. Because of that, the drummer is my best friend. My drummer usually act as my listener studied, for example, in the middle of a race, even myself, when to tell something to my boat, usually the drummer is the person who relay the command to the team. Or the drummer do a head signal to tell me if I have to go somewhere or if I have to go that other way. Not only that, but the drummer and the steer person are both responsible for pacing the boat. So the drummer and me, we have to make plans, we communicate a lot, and we have to come up with new ways to signal. Maybe we have to say we want to have more power now, or something else happened, and we need to make cut up. So me and the drummer, we have a signal to each other for that. Okay. And another fun thing about a steer person is that it's not about going to the right place that it had for me. Because by the time I became a steer person, I've already raced for 10 years. So I'm very familiar with the race procedure. The biggest challenge was actually getting my first ride, because I'm hard of hearing. I don't really understand how my first come off, so that in the middle of a race, I'm yelling, and I want my team to hear me over the sound of other boat and the team's yelling at each other. So sometimes my voice gets really distorted if I'm trying to scream at the full volume, and I have to have somebody to tell me how my voice is at a high volume. So again, with a lot of communicating with the team, hey, do you understand me at this volume? Maybe you can ask how I could change my voice to make it easier. I will give you a really fun example of what I've done at the steer prison. I see of the so-called Pacific Dragon Boat Festival, there is a 2 kilometer race where you have 16 teams racing in a group. That means I have to perform three E-turns. Now, those E-turns are pretty tight. You can't have a whole bunch of boats climbing into a tiny space if the charity turn around. Usually, there is a race official that keeps an eye on who is the elite, and the boat elite gets the right of the way. So that race, the drummer and I work together again. Usually the official call out who has the right of the way, and the drummer gives me a thumbs up if I have the right of the way, or a thumbs down if I don't have the way. And I just try to not ram into either boat, either E-turn, or it's really cramped sometimes. I also go to rush right another team. What do you mean by rush rider? Rush rider is when I am still on the boat, really close into the rush of another boat ahead of me, and I ride their rush. It makes the boat move more easily. It's the same as the starter in a back race or the car race, but I have to let the team know. So I also have to practice my voice and let everybody know it's time to rush right. And that is it for the communication issues. I'm going to talk a little bit about the technology involved. As a hard of hearing person, I need to wear a hearing aid. That doesn't work very well within the mixture because water can pack up the ear tube and get into the machine. Those hearing aids are very expensive and easy to damage. They are way more delicate than eyeglasses, or an adaptive seat, or a glove strap. This is actually a big reason why I got a cochlear implant. A cochlear implant that did not make sound, so that means there are no holes or tubes for water to get into. I also got my cochlear implant around the time they started to make water-resistant cochlear implant. I've fallen into the water once and my cochlear implant was fine. But I still had to take care to clean it because salt water is bad for the ear aid or cochlear implant. That leaves me the other issues for retouching of the device. I wear an ear hook that specifically holds it in place on a piece of wire, but there is a risk of it coming off if I fall into the water. And I talk about a sick person out with a canoe. The chance of falling into the water is extremely low, so I have no problem wearing my cochlear implant. However, when man out with a canoe, just when I started out, the risk of falling into the water was real because of the balance of the seat, and I was not too familiar with it. So I have to paddle down, and it's completely out of story for a racer kayak. The racer kayak are very, very narrow, and they are designed for speed, which means they are very unstable. The first time I rode a racer kayak, I fell into the water 20 times. It's really hard. So When I'm naturally my cockier implant, I have to be extra vigilant of motorboat because the boat take a sneak up to me. For example, when I'm out in the first creek, I have to start the acrobatics, or if I'm paddling out into the English Bay, there is a lot of boat traffic from around the marina at the Bright Beach or the Rickle Beach. But overall, I've had an amazing time paddling at the water, and thank you for listening.
Okay, so thank you so much, Clovis, for sharing your story with us. So today's topic is water or summer water sports. In particular, we're going to be talking about dragon boat, and that's what Clovis was talking about. And now we're going to a song break. And I'm going to leave that to you, Allison. Do you want to introduce our song break?
Sure.
Our next song.
Our next song.
Our new song.
Our first song is Julia Samulova,
yeah,
who is a wheelchair user and represented Russia in Eurovision 2018. So here we go.
My heart is in command, no longer in the dark. My castle in the sand, snow made of stone and rock. The memory I knew, the things I've been through, and everything I do, it's got me living by the minute.
Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
We're on.
And we're back on All Access Pass CITR 101.9 FM. We just heard Julia. Do you want to introduce her?
DP? Hang on. So that was Julia. Very complicated last name, but Julia Sumilovia from Russia. And now we are going to switch it to Allison, who's going to be introducing us our next, or our interview, our first interview that she conducted yesterday with Amy. Do you want to talk about that, Allison?
Sure. So Amy Amantia, Amantia is also a dragon boat racer, and she lives with legal blindness.
Yeah. So how was the interview?
It was good.
Yeah. She had lots to say.
She had lots to say, and she was fascinating to talk to.
Wow. Okay. Awesome. So Amy, if we say your last name wrong, please forgive us. But here's the interview with Amy.
Can you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
I live with legal blindness, and I have for the last 12 or 13 years. And when I first lost my sight, I was, there's this period that you go through where you're trying to refigure out things. I was 24 years old, and I had to give up a career and a spouse, more or less, and learn how to do things all over again. And I decided to throw myself into volunteering. And it was when I started volunteering, and really the reason I did that was twofold. One, I wanted to connect with the blind community because I was now a member of it. And two, because I was so young, I didn't want to be in a position where I might be applying for jobs and work in the future and somebody look at my resume and say, well, geez, why the gap in employment? Because that doesn't help you either. So I thought if I went ahead and did some volunteering, that I would be able to keep my skills up, connect with the community, find resources, all that kind of good stuff. So I volunteered about 60 hours a week. So it was a full-time gig for me, and that's how I found resources in the blind community, including sport.
What do you advocate for, and what are your goals in life?
So I advocate for just about everything. I work very hard on behalf of not only the blind community, but the disability community in general. I advocate for equal access to arts and culture. So I do that through working with local theater companies on making both the venue of the theater accessible for patrons, also for staff and people who work backstage, and also for performers who want to perform on stage. So we're looking at accessibility from, you know, a sort of a full circle ideal. I also advocate for, people who use guide dogs for guide dog services and the rights, the basic human right to take guide dogs into public spaces. I advocate for equal access to sports and cultural events. I advocate for better transit in our local communities. I mean, the list is really long. I advocate for affordable housing and accessible housing for people living with disabilities. So, and certainly what I advocate for are my goals. As a person who lives with disability and a person who's been through the system and recognizes how imperfect it is, my goals are to help people with disabilities. A lot of them, again, are in the blind community, but disability in general is a finding equality and access in disability is really high on my priority list. So I want to see our communities of people thrive and find equality, get back to work, enjoy recreational programs.
What made you want to be part of a sport like dragon boat?
So sport for me is really important. I was an athlete before I lost my sight. I was a oh gosh, I played everything from lacrosse to volleyball to you name it. I was playing all sorts of different things, basketball and everything. And I really like the camaraderie that comes with a team sport. So Dragon Boat is a great sport for people who are blind or partially sighted, because once you get on the boat, there's no sight required to participate in the sport. And we have, you know, our Dragon Boat team is called Vision Impossible. It is a program of BC Blind Sports. And we strive to have a 50-50 composition of paddlers. So 50% in the blind and partially sighted category, and 50% of paddlers who are fully sighted. And that is not only because we want to be an inclusive team, but we also need a certain level of support from our sighted teammates in terms of, you know, helping us maybe pick out a paddle that's the right length, or doing sighted guide down to the boat so that when we cross a bike path, we don't get hit by bikes, that kind of stuff. But once you're on the boat itself, it's all about feeling the rhythm and the metronome of the boat. So there's 20 people on a boat and we paddle almost like one single stroke. That's the goal, is to practice hard so that we all paddle it in the same time to move the boat forward.
So how did you all meet your partners or your teammates in dragon boating?
Well, there are 10 benches on a dragon boat, and it's a little bit like a long canoe with these 10 benches, two people per bench, so that's 20 people paddling. One person at the back who's your steers person, who of course lives with full eyesight so they can steer the boat safely, and the person at the front who's your caller, and that person calls out the strokes so that you know what strokes to perform and at what time during a race piece. And so BC Blind Sports does a lot of advertising and recruiting for this team, as do other team members. So for example, I paddle with my mother. We do it together. So we came to the team together. We have other paddlers who have brought spouses or children, and by children I mean adult children. And so the team just sort of grows organically because we all really enjoy each other's company. And so every once in a while you say to somebody, hey, are you interested in trying paddling? And we bring them out. Certainly in the blind community, it's all about networking and who you know, and meeting people and encouraging them to come out to try the sport. And, you know, if they love the sport, great. If the sport's not for them, we don't say, you know, we don't hold them responsible for coming out and trying it and not loving it, as we all do. But that's sort of how the team grows over time and how we find each other. And the Dragon Boat community in general is quite a big community of people, but they all love what they do. So if for some reason we're out on the water ready to do a race and we only have 18 people and we need 20, there are other people on other teams who don't know us specifically who will jump on our boat and help us out for that race. So the community is really lovely and wants to see everybody have a good time.
Can you walk us through your first training experience and what you were feeling at the time?
So Dragon Boat is very technical, and people often say to me, oh, you must have really strong arms. Because it looks like, when you're watching it from shore, like you're paddling with your arms, but you're actually not. Because the arms are small muscles. And so to pull heavy water, and believe me, the Dragon Boat is very heavy, you need to use your strongest muscles in your body. So that's your back and your legs. And it's all about how you position those in the boat in order to pull the water. So really your arms are just holding the paddle in its position, but you take your body and you, so if you imagine yourself sitting in a chair and you're holding your paddle on the right side of your body, you have to turn your hips forward and rotate and then bend your body forward and reach. Stick your paddle in the water and then do the motion in reverse to pull the water backwards. So it's a little bit like stabbing concrete and pulling yourself forward. So you get this real heavy motion. And so as a blind paddler, it's one thing for your coach to say, well, this is how you hold the paddle and this is how you turn and this is how you reach and this is how you rotate. And they can do that for sighted people. They just hold the paddle and they go through the motions and everybody goes, ah, yeah, I get it. But when you're blind or partially sighted, you are not going to see those visual details. So your coach will come up to our coach in particular, who coaches two teams that are blind, comes up and asks if they can manipulate your body. So it's through touch, and they do hand over hand. So they show you how to hold the paddle. They move your hips so that you know how to rotate properly. And so they walk you through that sort of step by step, both before you get on the water, so you have a concept. And once you're on the water, we continue to work on that over and over and over again, because it's the position of the stroke. If you're doing it correctly, you will, one, reduce injury, and two, you will be the most effective and efficient paddler you can be. And that is the goal of the team, is to be effective and efficient with every stroke so that every stroke is in time with the other paddlers.
Your team has traveled to a number of dragon boat festivals. How have you found those events from a disability perspective and accommodating and useful?
So our team does two festivals a season. Now, there are many, many festivals out there, but our specific team, we like to stay pretty local. It's easier for transportation. So we do the Concord Pacific Festival, which is the big one that happens in False Creek every year. It's one of the biggest dragon boat festivals in the world. And then we do one at the end of August, which happens in Steveston, which is near Richmond, which is a lovely festival. And we find that people are usually pretty accommodating, but it's accommodating after. So I'm the team manager of Vision Impossible as well as a paddler. And so I have to advocate on behalf of those of our team who live with sight loss. So I work with the organizers of the festival for, let's say, if one of our paddlers is coming and they need a special parking place. Okay, so I will work with the organizers on where this parking place is and is it accessible to the festival site. Also where our tents are set up. Usually what would happen in the past is you would show up and it was first come, first serve, and you plot your tent up on a patch of grass. But if you weren't there at 6 o'clock in the morning, you would be the furthest away from where we call marshalling, which is where all the teams line up in order to go down to the docks, which can be difficult for a team that needs to be sighted guided everywhere if you have to walk 25 minutes to get to where you marshal. So I would work with the organizers in order to find a spot and reserve a spot as closest to where our marshalling location is. And that also is important if you want to be close to where bathrooms are, just in terms from a sighted guide perspective, because we are guiding people who have sight loss. And so if you're taking one person at a time to the porta potties, for example, that takes 25 minutes every time you go. There just isn't time in the day to do that. But if you're close enough that it's a 5-minute walk, then it's not like, okay, blind people, let's all get in a group together because we're going on a group field trip to the bathrooms, right? So it does take a little bit of upfront negotiation with the organizers of the festivals in order to make them as accessible as possible.
Do you or other people with visual impairments also participate in other paddling disciplines like outrigger canoe or kayaking?
Yeah, so there are other paddle disciplines that are available, and people who live with sight loss do take advantage of some of these paddling opportunities. I like to stick to dragon boat. I like the idea of a large team that comes together that works to do one movement in synchronicity, which is much more difficult than it sounds. But Outrigger has a smaller number of people. And Outrigger is more of a long distance type sport, and Dragon Boat is essentially more of a sprint type of sport. So I like the idea of the adrenaline with the sprint, whereas I don't really enjoy the idea of having to paddle for 2 kilometers in an Outrigger out in the open ocean. And also Outrigger culture, you do these drills where you have to dump out of the boat. So you're thrown into the water and you have to climb back into the boat. In Dragon Boat, we don't do that. If your boat tips, which is very, very, very unusual, you know, you're done for the day kind of thing. But in Outrigger, it's a purposeful drill because you're paddling for, you know, 2 kilometers, maybe even longer, and you need to switch out paddlers. Well, the only way to do that while the boat is moving is to have another sort of small motorboat pick up people who have dumped into the water and load people who have swam to the outrigger and crawled in. So that just doesn't seem exciting for me. But there are many blind people that I know that have done this sport. Certainly kayaking or canoeing, when you have somebody who is sitting in front of you doing the quote-unquote steering of that boat. Certainly lots of people do this and quite successfully. Not really my thing. I like the dragon boat, and that's where my focus is.
Is there anything you would like to tell everyone? A message you want our CITR listeners to hear and understand?
I think what I would like to impart is something that I impart to just about everybody that I do in my advocacy teaching and my training, which is that people who live with disabilities and people who live with sight loss have opportunities in life, have rich, full, exciting, vibrant lives. And I think sometimes the general public, we call people who are able-bodied TABs, temporarily able-bodied. Because the truth of human beings is we all have a temporarily able body until we don't have it. And we're not guaranteed at any time to live our whole lives without injury or illness or any of that. So those who have the privilege of having a temporarily able-bodied sometimes look at people with disabilities as being inspirational for doing things that are sort of just expected to live life, right? Half the time I get people who think I'm inspirational because I have put my clothes on in the morning and I have 2 black socks on instead of 1 black and 1 green, right? Like that was some sort of big challenge that I overcame in my day. And while, yes, there are little barriers and little challenges that people with disabilities face every day of their lives, it's not an inspiration to have completed a daily task that everybody is required to complete in their lives. And so removing that pity lens when you look at people with disabilities, I think is really important. And recognizing that that although we live with disability, we don't have lives that are that need to be pitied. And I remember one of my first experiences on this dragon boat team, because back in the day, this Vision Impossible has been around for 10 years, and it still is recreational, but it was so recreational at the time that we had people that would come on the boat who lived with sight loss that didn't paddle. So they just came on the boat sort of for a joy ride because they didn't want to paddle. They just wanted to go for a ride. But that made everybody else who was paddling have to do more work. And of course, it made us last in every race because we were carrying weight of people who weren't paddling. And it was more about just putting people on the boat and less about a sport that was competitive, even though recreational was still competitive. And when we would come off the water after a race, people would cheer for us, but they weren't cheering because we were a dragon boat team that had done its best. They were cheering in the, oh, yay, Vision Impossible. Look at the blind team coming off of the water. Isn't it great that they're participating in life? And so that really got me. And when I took over management of the team, we changed the focus of the team, which is the accommodation is for the sight loss, not for the paddling. So you still have to work hard to be a paddler and an athlete, but the accommodation is for the sight loss. And so that was a distinction that we made in order to grow the team and for everybody to work their hardest to whatever that extent was at every practice in order to be a full inclusive teammate.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Amy. And we're back on CITR FM 101.9 in Vancouver, and we're listening to All Access Pass, the summer edition.
Yeah.
What you just heard was an interview with Amy Amantia. Thank you so much, Amy. Another interview that I did yesterday was with Sydney Spriggs, who also does dragon boating. but she does dragon boating with people who have multiple sclerosis. So hopefully we get to listen to her as well. And here she is. Can you introduce yourself for everybody?
Yes. I am Sydney Spraggs, and I have multiple sclerosis. I have been living with multiple sclerosis for 20 years, almost 20 years. And one of the things that I do almost daily is work out to keep my body moving as much as possible. I can no longer walk, but I can use machines that are here available at a place called The Park for Physical Activity Research Center on 10th and Willow, right by VGH.
Right by VGH, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I'm just pulling up my questions. Tell us about your life with MS. What are the challenges you face daily?
Well, the biggest challenge I have now is that I can no longer walk. And that is a huge challenge for me. I was walking with a walker up until 2016, when I broke my femur, my right femur, and I have not been able to walk since then. So I work out with a new step and a TheraTrainer and a standing frame, and I just work out almost every day.
Lovely. What made you want to be a part of a sport like dragon boating?
Well, in 2004, 2005, I was visiting my sister, who at the time lived in George Pearson. She also had MS, but she had had been diagnosed with MS when she was quite young. And so I met her nurse, who was dragon boating, and I said to her, you know, do you think people with MS could do that? And she said, I can't think of any reason why not. Go out to UBC and talk to the physio and the occupational therapist and see what they say. So I did. I went out to UBC, and they said, you know, we think that it would be great for people with MS, especially those who still have strong upper body strength. And so they gave me some names of people to call who might give us the funding. And I did that, and I met a fellow. His name was Stephen Young, and he gave us the startup funds. He worked with EMD Serono, which is an MS drug, and he gave us the funds to rent the boat, to get the paddles and the life jacket, and we were off and running. That was 2005, and we've never looked back.
Nice. Tell us about your dragon boat team, Off Balance. What started this, and how did you and your team meet?
Well, we started every year, it seems, our team has a bit of a different personality. And sometimes, you know, for two or three years, we have people who come, and then they find other things. And we encourage other people to come. So it's a constant flux. But we started out getting the word out through people living with MS, and we, you know, encouraged people to bring friends and who might be able to help load the boat. And yes.
Lovely. Can you walk us through your first training experience and what you were feeling at the time and what challenges you had to face and overcome?
Well, I love the water, so that was never a challenge for me to be worried about being in the water. But you know, it was a learning curve that I needed to go through, learning to, I'd paddled in canoes before, but I'd never been in a dragon boat. So that was a new experience with other paddlers who then would be able to, we have to stay together, we have to paddle together. And so that was a learning experience. We wear life vests in case the boat goes over, but we've never, ever even come close to that. So we, yeah, it's just been a fabulous experience.
Yeah. How had multiple sclerosis affected the participants? Is it a challenge to deal with the docks, loading and unloading for the dragon boat? And are there other challenges that people with MS face?
Some people, when I first started, said, well, how are you going to get down to the dock? And I said, well, we can do that. We're, you know, we can figure it out. And we have. If the tide is out, the ramp is very steep, and that has caused a few glitches. But for the most part, we manage. And with our able-bodied helpers, who are indispensable, we manage. Then, over the years, we had a group called Tetra, who helped design adapted dragon boat team seats. So they have seats with backs that can help hold us upright if we need that. So three of us on the team at this time use the adaptable seats.
What does the team do to make the sport fun and enjoyable, but in an accessible way? So you mentioned the seats.
Yes. And we have a coach, and our coach is a young woman from UBC who paddles with the team herself. And she is wonderful. She is getting a degree in kinesiology, so she knows about people with disabilities. And she just helps us, helps new paddlers with their strokes, improving the stroke, getting used to the best posture on the boat, using our core muscles. And yeah, she's been very helpful. So we're so glad to have her. Yes.
Awesome. The team has traveled to some dragon boat festivals.
Yes.
How have you found those events from your disability perspective accommodating and useful?
Well, I think people who see us year after year are in admiration of our team. The fact that we come out, we are happy, we have a lot of fun, and it's just a very positive experience. Yes. So that we go to Steveston at the end of August for a regatta. We've also been to Harrison. We went into the International Dragon Boat Festival, but that was a few years ago. It got pretty expensive. So now we pretty much set our goal for going to Steveston at the end of August every year.
In your opinion, what other water sports can people with MS enjoy?
Well, I've seen people and heard of people going kayaking. And if they go to Dragon Zone, which is by Science World, there are people who can work with them, help them to get on the kayaks. And I've heard that's a wonderful experience. There's also sailing at Jericho, and I've tried that and enjoyed it. My main focus has been the dragon boat.
Is there anything you would like to tell everyone? A message that you want our CITR listeners to hear and understand?
Oh, mostly I just like to tell them that I think that coming out paddling with our team irresistible, and I am so hoping that we get more able-bodied people coming out to help us, especially young people from UBC, and that would be just so amazing. We would so love it. A couple of weeks ago, 10 of us were down by the water, ready to go out on a Sunday morning to paddle together. That's the only day we get to paddle. And there just weren't enough able-bodied people to help us load the boat. For me, it requires a sling and four strong people to carry me onto the boat.
Thank you so much. And we're back on CITR FM 101.9 in Vancouver. And you're listening to All Access Pass. You just listened to Sydney Spriggs and her experience and her team's experience with dragon boating.
And so that wraps up our show for today. We hope that you enjoyed it. It's about Dragon Boat, and all the three guests that you heard all have some sort of a disability. I mean, Clovis has hard of hearing, and he's part of a Dragon Boat, a separately team. And then Amy, who also has a disability, is blind. And then Sydney, who is MS, also in a Dragon Boat athlete. So we hope you enjoyed today's episode. And now, if you would like to know more about All Access Pass, you can email us at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca. And thank you for listening today. Also, thank you to Amy, Sydney, and Clovis for sharing their amazing stories with us on Dragon Boat.
Please like our All Access Pass Facebook page. We would like more likes on that page.
Yes, please.
And if you're on Twitter or Instagram or both, please follow or access at access and the land. CTCTCTL. And message anytime if you want to get involved with the Accessibility Collective.
Yeah, so that's at @access_CITR for Twitter and Instagram. And if you missed part of our live show today and want to listen again, or even if you want to listen to our past shows, you can go by going to CITR.ca and click on search box and all access pass. And a big shout out, if she's listening, to Lydia. So hi,
Lydia. Hi, Grandpa.
And hi, Allison's Grandpa. And yeah, that wraps up our show today. So stay tuned to next CITR programming, and we'll be back next week on this time on All Access Pass on CITR. And we're just before we leave, we're going to play a song, and Allison, you're going to introduce our last song.
Sure. It's by Jeff Healy. It's named Angel Eyes, and Jeff Healy is Canadian. He was really big in the 80s, and he lived with blindness.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Girl, you're looking fine tonight, and every guy has got you here beside. What you're doing with a clown like me is surely one of life's little mysteries.
Was it all a dream? It was all a dream. I'm looking down. I can feel your presence. I can hear you growl. Tingle in my spine. Silence getting loud. When you're raised by wolves, you feel them all around. Break of dawn, rise and wake up. Do what the elders taught us, prepping for morning hunt. It's bone freezing cold here like the North Pole, but I remember well, no fear to poison my soul. Might be natural for some, anxiety kept at bay. No other way to find a little brother, gotta face the day. Mama, mine departed, Papa dug an early grave. Brother checked, crying, never got to see him old and gray. Wipe your tears, brother, grab your hatchet, got the rifle. I know you hungry, see them rabbit tracks, think of a bite full. Chin low, watch for ice, wind is feeling spiteful. Cold enough to freeze time, as woodsman, no survival. Can't be idle, moving on, push before the storm. Just a few more miles, we probably safe and warm. I got us lost, exhausted, gotta find a way. Pushing through the trees, stumbled on a leather duotang. Look to my left and heart skips a beat. Two wolves stood in silence, danger in my gut. One wolf showing teeth while the other spoke up. Choose one, I heard it echo all through the trees. The other snarled, growling at me like I'm something to eat. But why can't I move? I can barely breathe. Look around, no sign of Chet, and how can it be? Can't even lift the trigger finger, standing shocked and confused. And how I'm supposed to choose, gotta get my head out this noose. And I hear, look deeper, you've been dancing with the reaper. Will you crossroads, pick one or you be taking neither?